This is Real Relationship Talk with Dr. B. Pope and Fee, the Busy Bee. Real Talk is a podcast that covers everything that will help you to improve yourself and the lives of others. And just sometimes we might discuss the tea in the streets. Now, I want to introduce Dr. B. Pope and Fee, the Busy Bee.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Real Talk. My name is Dr. B. Pope.
And I'm Fee, the Busy Bee.
And I hope that you're having a great start to your Saturday. And as we always say,
if you start your Saturday off with us, you've started your Saturday off right.
That's right. And I hope that you all have learned something new and just was able to encourage someone this week. I know it's been a minute since we've been live. I mean, we have been swamped. We've been running down to Florida on business probably the last 10 days. We've been down there, what, twice? I mean, seriously. And not just to, you know, Gainesville, but we've been deep in Florida, but it's been awesome, you know. And then last week we had a speaking event. So we've just been very busy the last couple of weeks, which I'm thankful to God for that. But when it comes to learning different lessons, something that I've learned over the past maybe week or so, and I've always felt this way, but it's making sure that you create memories. I was down in Florida on business and I was able to spend, you know, a birthday, you know, celebration with my aunt. You know, her name is Nanny Judy. So Judy Smith. And I was thinking about that this morning. We call all of our aunts Nanny, you know, in my family. And I'm like, I wonder how that got started. We don't call them auntie. We call them Nanny. So all of my aunts, we call Nanny. So I have no clue how that started. But one thing that I realized is that life is about making memories. I mean, each and every single day, if you can make a memory with someone, even if it costs you maybe a little money, a little time, I guarantee you in the long run, it will pay off. Because I think the older that I get, I realize that I cherish memories. You know what I mean? Different times that I had with my family, different times that I had with my wife or people that I know. I mean, those things mean so much to me as I get older. So that's something that I learned this week.
Yeah, I think that's a great lesson because it's so intangible. It's like, you know, you need to be able to. It's kind of like when you go out and, you know, and do something, and let's say you went out and, you know, spent some money or whatever, mm-hmm. You have that garment that you can and say, oh, okay, I had this, but it's something different when you go out and spend with people.
Right.
And you have that conversation that you had or that time when they said this or said that, or, you know, you just have great memories.
Yeah.
And I think about with your aunt, I remember you talking about what great summers you had.
Yes.
A summer down there or something?
Oh, yes. When I graduated high school, I spent the summer down there in Panama City. Uncle Milton, you know what I'm saying, Nanny Judy, and just my uncle, his brother, Uncle, I can't remember his name, but I know that he had kids, Maury. I mean, it was just a great summer. I mean, I had a job at the amusement park. I got over my fear of riding roller coasters. I used to have a phobia of riding roller coasters. I remember I used to walk all the way up top, and I'd just go straight through. I'd hang out with my friends, and they'd be like, man, you a punk. But I said, I didn't care, because I didn't want to ride on a roller coaster. So that summer, I faced my fear. I rode the roller coaster probably 50 or 60 times till I got over my fear.
Wow.
So now I love them. I love the front seat, back seat, but now I think I'm getting a little motion sickness, so I got to watch that. But yeah, I spent the incredible summer with them. You know, I love them so much. So on that note, we're going to have our Black History Fact of the Day. And today we're going to be talking about a trailblazer for women's rights and also civil rights. And her name is Sojourner Truth.
Yes.
That little man in the back over there say, women need to be helped into carriages and over mud puddles. And I'm here to tell you, ain't nobody helped me into no carriages. And I ain't never been helped over nary a mud puddle. And ain't I a woman?
Oprah has been reciting these words since she was a young woman. They're the daring thoughts of one of the most powerful figures in African American history, the abolitionist and women's rights advocate, Sojourner Truth.
The woman we know as Sojourner Truth was born Isabella Bomfrey. She was born enslaved. She lived with several masters before running away to New York City, where she changed her name to a name that announces her mission as someone who is on the road to telling the truth. She was an itinerant preacher, and so the name Sojourner fit quite well.
In the 1840s, Sojourner Truth committed her voice to the abolitionist movement and became a formidable and widely respected equal rights activist. Although she never learned to read or write, Truth was an extremely popular speaker at anti-slavery and women's rights gatherings. And in 1850, she published a book, The Narrative of Sojourner Truth, which she dictated to a white feminist author. But it was a speech she delivered in 1851 to a crowd in Ohio that would make Sojourner Truth a feminist icon.
I done born 13 children and then seen them all sold off into slavery. And when I cried out with a woman's grief, ain't nobody but Jesus heard me. And ain't I a woman?
So the thing we know Sojourner Truth for is that she said famously, ain't I a woman? Or did she? Because the historian Nell Painter says that really her words were twisted to fit the agenda of a white woman journalist who came to hear her talk. But what we do know for sure about Sojourner Truth is that she had a long history of showing up, particularly to suffrage spaces, to challenge people's most fundamental belief system. And so even if she didn't say, ain't I a woman, she is saying, see me for who I am. Recognize my gender, recognize my struggle, and treat me with dignity and respect.
So today, I want to just salute Sojourner Truth, a woman's advocate, a civil rights trailblazer, and also someone who really understood that one person could make a difference in society.
What time is it?
It's time for the tea. It's time for the tea.
What time is it?
It's time for the tea. It's time for the tea.
Yes, it is time for the tea, you guys. And I hope everyone is doing great this Saturday morning. Yes, everyone is looking forward to Beauty in the Black. Yes, Beauty in the Black, Tyler Perry's official trailer has come out for the sitcom. And it is going to be great. It's season 2. I don't know if you guys got a chance to check out season 1. It's going to be great. It's going to be airing soon. So keep a lookout for that. Also, just to catch up on the news with Deion Sanders, we know that end up all the things that he was going through, he was going through bladder cancer. Mm. And so we know that he totally removed his bladder and he's doing better. He's out coaching on the field for Colorado and ready for the new season.
Wow.
So we're excited about that. We're grateful that God allowed him to get through what he went through. And wow, what a great story and testimony that Deion has through that. And his faith is just so outstanding. He's so encouraging about his faith that he doesn't allow things to get in the way. And that is, I'm sure he has situations that happen, like, hey, I mean, bladder surgery is a big thing and getting your whole bladder replaced, but how his faith seems to overweigh all those things.
That's
so
true.
That's just so cool to hear about him. Also, Serena Williams is in the news for doing the campaign for weight loss drugs. And so I don't know what that's about, but Serena Williams is trying to be the front campaign for weight loss now.
Well, they say her husband owns so much majority stock in that GLP company.
Oh, that's why.
Right. So I was watching something on the internet a few days ago, and they were saying that she said she lost 31 pounds using that GLP drug. But a lot of people, especially in the black community, or kind of questioning her because she said she could not lose the weight until she used those drugs to get where she wanted to be.
Right.
So now you're looking at, she's an athlete, she's athletic, but maybe because of her body type, but now she's lost the 31 pounds. But some leaders in the black community are saying, is that good for our black girls? Because now, you know, let's say if they're training, they're athletic, now will they be kind of more motivated to use GLP drugs as opposed to physical training if they say that the GOAT of tennis had to use those drugs to lose weight? So that's an argument from...
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, this lady has went through so much. Her body is older now. She's had kids. Yeah. It's like, come on now.
Right, but
so
there's, you know, people always want to throw something out there.
Yeah. On sad news, I'm remembering Danielle Spencer, the child star who made a meaningful light beyond the spotlight. So what was the show she was playing?
What's Happening?
What's Happening,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, What's Happening.
With Run.
And What's Happening Now, because they came out with two of them.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, Rerun, Roger, you know, Dwayne.
Oh, that's right. It was like them in their older life.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, so I'm sure you guys remember Danielle Spencer. Dr. Danielle Spencer.
Right.
So she passed from cancer and not too long ago, and we just wanted to spend some time just to talk about her. And say condolences to her family.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And what a great, fun light that she gave growing up. Because I know I used to watch What's Happening all the
time.
Boy,
she was quick with those comebacks, boy.
Yes, she was.
And we need some of that today for that mama and keeping them kids straight. You know what I mean? But, hey, that's a whole nother conversation
right
there.
It's a whole nother conversation. Well, we want to spotlight also, too, the youngest Chick-fil-A owner. It's so cool that Ashley Lamont, a Spelman College grad, made history as the youngest Black franchise owner of Chick-fil-A history. Her journey started at 15 behind the counter and led her to leadership while at Spelman and inspired her to switch to economics, all to chase her dream. In 2011, she opened her first location near USC, proving that hard work plus vision equals unstoppable. So that's great. Black excellence.
Black excellence. So let's lift her up.
The youngest Chick-fil-A owner.
Yes.
Go Ashley. That's awesome. Now, on some bad news, we're going to be talking about today. Our topic is going to be about gun violence. And on a sad note, people have heard that T. Hood has passed this past week. And so it's a lot of theory behind how you passed, what happened, who shot him, all this stuff. People are under investigation with this story, and it's just sad. I mean, this is a young rapper in Atlanta, just getting started, really, and on the scene. And so his rapper name is T Hood.
Okay.
And so just on a bad note with that, I know we're gonna be talking about gun violence, and this guy was shot, and probably a month prior before that, he was shot prior before. So this guy has gotten shot like twice. Wow. The first one this time, he, of course, now is deceased.
Now, are you going to go into any detail about what happened? I mean, what?
We don't really know for sure what happened. All we know was domestic violence thing that happened
there
with him and his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And then it led to someone coming over and trying to aid in her defense.
Okay.
But like I said, we don't know all the details. And, I just rather kind of stay out of all that.
Okay,
but I know
no,
I brought
good.
It up because we're going to be talking about gun violence and how it's just so sad now that another young man has lost his life.
Okay. Well, all right then. Well, in political corner, don't have that much to say. You know, our president, he's doing his thing, but and not positive things, in my opinion. But he's actually, I guess, going against the Smithsonian now, talking about slavery, how it wasn't all that bad. And he's actually trying to remove some of the relics and some of the historical items from the Smithsonian Institute. So I'm going to play this audio clip and you all could kind of hear what's going on.
President Trump says he has instructed his lawyers to scour through America's museums to rid them of exhibits he considers woke, specifically citing exhibits on slavery. President Trump targeted the Smithsonian Museums, saying they are, quote, out of control, where everything discussed is how horrible our country is, how bad slavery was, and how unaccomplished the downtrodden have been. Back in March, the president signed an executive order directing the Smithsonian Institution, which runs more than 20 museums in Washington and elsewhere, to, quote, celebrate American exceptionalism and remove divisive or partisan narratives. Last month, the Smithsonian removed references to Trump in an exhibit on presidential impeachments in the Museum of American History. Mentions of Trump's impeachments were later restored, although with changes. Now he's complaining about exhibits on slavery. Although during his first term, he visited the Museum of African American History and Culture, which tells the story of slavery and celebrates African American accomplishments, and he called it a, quote, truly great museum done with love. It's not clear whether President Trump actually has the authority to tell any museum, including the museums of the Smithsonian Institution, what to put on display. The American Alliance of Museums, which represents museums across the country, says that no president has the power to impose the kind of review that Trump says he is now ordering. The organization has warned that the president's actions represent a, quote, growing threat of censorship
against museums in America. Mary?
Yeah, lots of questions about where this goes from here. John, thanks.
Well, I want to cut that clip off there. So in our political corner, so we see that the president is trying to remove some of the historical artifacts about slavery, that our history should be more positive, but when it's and not focus on the negative in society. And I love it. They said he really doesn't have the right. But you think about he has the Supreme Court. He has the House, Senate, you know, and himself. So you just never know what might happen. And I hope that he stops trying to erase history, because history is history. That's how we learn. I mean, it's part of the American way. I mean, you think about it. That's how the White House was built, by slaves. I mean, you think about the economy was built on the backs of slaves. I mean, we just heard with Sojourner Truth and just how she said 13 of her kids, she bore 13 kids, but yet she saw all of those kids being sold into slavery. Wow. So you want to eradicate the history of America, but yet when we talk about other nationalities, you don't see them going up to Washington messing with the Museum of the Jewish Museum, because I've been there, the Holocaust Museum. So why are you focusing on the African Americans right now? So that's just something that we have to ponder. And I just encourage everyone, you know, saying to put your voice out there on that, because it's not right, because it's our history.
That's right.
All right. So we're going to have a great show today. We're going to come back and we're going to be talking about gun violence in America. What should we do? And not just in the black and brown community, because that's the narrative right there. Right. It's all about blacks and brown people. But gun violence is happening all across the United States. So we're going to talk about that in a few minutes after the break. My name is Dr. B. Pope.
And I'm Fee, the Busy Bee.
And this is Real Talk.
Let me see you go back. Let me see you come in. Now let me see you go back. Let me see you come in. Let me see you go back. Let me see you come in. Let me see you go back. Let me see you come in. Yeah.
It's Friday and I'm ready to swing. Pick up my girls and hit the party scene.
Back, 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 back Are you feeling overwhelmed, stressed, or lost in life's journey? It's time to find peace and guidance at A Better Counselor Services, your trusted partner in pastoral counseling. At A Better Counselor Services, we offer a safe space for individuals and families seeking support, healing, and spiritual guidance. Our holistic approach integrates faith-based principles with professional counseling techniques, empowering you to navigate life's challenges with resilience and hope. Contact us at 404-992-8273 or visit our website at www.abettercounselor.com to learn more about our virtual and in-person services. Your journey to living your best life continues here.
Hey, hey, it's Feed the Busy Bee, and I'm here with Better Care For You. We treat our clients like family, and we live to care. Why call us? We take our mission to provide exceptional in-home care in familiar surroundings seriously. Our services are a companion sitter, personal care, and we also work with Alzheimer's and dementia patients. Call us today at 678-900-8397. Again, that's 678-900-8397. Or check us out on the web at BetterCare, the number 4, while you. That's BetterCareForYou.com.
My prophecy, stress in the city, the cops are chopping me, the project is full of bullets, the bodies is dropping, ain't no stopping me, constantly moving while making millions, witnessing killings, leaving dead bodies in the abandoned buildings, carries the children cause they illin', addicted to killing, and the appeal from the cap villain, without feeling, but will they last or be blasted, hard-headed bastard, maybe you're listening, this casket, the aftermath, more bodies being buried, I'm losing my homies in a hurry, they relocating to the cemetery, got me worried, stressing my business buried, the question is will I live, no one in the world loves me, I'm headed for danger. Don't touch strangers, put one in the chamber whenever I'm feeling this anger. Don't wanna make excuses, cause this is how it is. What's the use unless we're shooting? No one notices the youth. It's just me against the world, baby.
Oh, killing, people dying, children hurting, hitting and crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning.
In the struggle, ugliness, and the success. Hear my words and listen to my signal of distress. I grew up in the city and know sometimes we had less. Compared to some of my niggas down the block, man, we were blessed. And life can't be no fairy tale, no once upon a time. And I be goddamn if a nigga don't be trying. Tell me, mama, please, why you be drinking all the time? Cause all the pain he brought you still linger in your mind. Cause pain still lingers on mine. On the road to riches, listen, this is what you find. The good news is, nigga, you came a long way. Bad news is, nigga, you went the wrong way. For what's money without happiness? Or hard times without the people you love? Though I'm not sure what's about to happen next, I ask for strength from the Lord above.
Oh, killing, people dying, children hurting, hitting and crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us.
So no matter how hard it gets, stick your chest out, keep your head up, and hands up.
With all this extra stressing, the question I wonder is after death, after my last breath, when will I finally get to rest through this suppression? They punish the people that's asking questions and those that possess. Still from the ones without possessions, the message I stress. To make it stop, study your lessons, don't settle for less. Even the genius asks questions, be grateful for blessings. Don't ever change, keep your essence. The power is in the people and politics we address. Always do your best, don't let the pressure make you panic. And when you get stranded and things don't go the way you planned it, dreaming of riches, in a position to make a difference. Politicians are hypocrites, they don't wanna listen. If I'm insane, it's the fame, ain't a proper change. It wasn't nothing like the game, it's just me against the world. Yeah. With nothing to lose, it's just me against the world, baby.
Oh, killing people, dying, children hurt, and you hear them crying. When you practice what you preach, and what you turn the other cheek. Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning. Where is the love?
Where is the love? Where is the love? Where is the love? Where is the love?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Real Talk. My name is Dr. B. Pope.
And I'm Fee, the Busy Bee.
And today, we're going to be talking about gun violence. Now, a couple of those songs, if you don't know, first song was Back and Forth by Aaliyah, which was a huge hit. I mean, that's the jam still to this day. And then the second song was Where's the Love Remix. Now, and it was Tupac, J. Cole, Black Eyed Peas. They put everybody in that song talking about where's the love when it comes to just dealing with violence. And that's what we're going to be talking about this morning as we continue the show. We're going to be talking about gun violence in America and how we got here and where do we go next. And remember, the narrative isn't just about the black and brown community. This is about everybody. I just want you to understand that, because when you look at the media, when you look at all the outlets, the Channel 5 News or whatever, that's what you see. You see it's all about black, and you got the position. They're all about black and brown people, you know, having issues with gun violence. But gun violence in America is complex. It cuts across race, region, and circumstance. For some, it's homicide in urban neighborhoods. For others, it's suicide in rural towns. Today, we'll break down the numbers by race, age, and the type of gun death, and ask yourself, how do we get here? First of all, let's break this down by race and ethnicity. We see two different stories. First of all, black Americans, you know, highest rate of firearm homicide. Gun violence is the leading cause of death for black youth and young adults. Okay, so that's the statistics I want you to hold on. And these are statistics from a 2023 study. Okay, it says in 2023, nearly 47,000 Americans died from gun injuries. 55 to 58% were suicides, and 38 to 40% were homicides. So when you think about that, almost more people died of homicides and homicide as opposed to suicides. And again, the media really doesn't talk about that at all. It's all about black on black crime. That's what we hear on all of the news outlets, like I said before. Now, Hispanic and Latino Americans, high risk of firearms homicide compared to white and Asian groups. White Americans, the majority of firearms suicide, especially older white men in rural communities. Roughly 70 to 75% of gun suicide or white males. So 70 to 75% of suicides are performed by white males. Now, Asian American is the lowest demographic rates among suicide and homicides. But over the last few years, the numbers are creeping up. So I just want to throw those statistics out there first before we start this conversation. So, Fee the Busy Bee, do you have anything you wanted to add on that?
I mean, no. I think what you're breaking down is good. I mean, the highest rates of firearm homicide, I mean, gun violence, it's bad.
Exactly. And then you think about suicide. You know, that's more than homicides. But we don't hear about that. Mm-mm. I mean, which is all sad, but everything is still gun violence.
So I wonder how much suicide is done by gun, too.
Well, that's what they said. They say suicides out of the 47,000%, there's more suicides than homicides. And there's 70% of these gun suicides are performed by white males. So I really didn't, before I looked at this, I didn't really understand that that many people committed suicide. But hey, I'm out the box with this. So how did we get here? Now, the rise in gun violence, I mean, there's several different scenarios. First of all, said gun violence didn't explode overnight. You know, Americans love their guns, but they said a big contributing factor to a lot of the gun violence in recent years is the pandemic and social upheaval.
Yeah,
in 2020,
that.
The nation saw a sharp 30% rise in homicides. At the same time, 7.5 million new gun owners in America entered the market. So you think about within the last couple years, that year, over 7.5 million people purchased a firearm.
And it's because it's easy access to the guns. It says more households with guns mean more opportunities for both international and uninternational shootings.
Right. So you have the pandemic and also mental health and stress. I mean, we can't get around this mental health piece. I know we talked about it on our show, but it seems like this mental health piece is very important when it comes to just everything. I mean, and we're talking about gun violence. It has a huge factor. It says anxiety, depression, and trauma are at record highs. Without strong coping skills, arguments or despair can quickly become deadly when a gun is nearby.
And so I think about how many young people in our communities, they die because of an argument.
Yes.
If you think about it.
Right.
It's like someone says something, they're holding on to it. Then, okay, I'm going to get them when I see them kind of stuff. And then this what transpired. I'm talking about with our younger people.
Oh, yes, right. With the younger youth and also with older people. I mean, I've heard there was a situation a few years ago in DeKalb County. It's a large county in Georgia. This happened about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. This is when road rage started getting, I guess, more popular in the headlines. And I remember there was a guy who was stalled. He was about 65 years old. He was stalled on the interstate. And somebody came up behind him. You know, he was on an exit ramp, just honking the horn, you know, hey, hurry up, move your van. He was in an older van, just going off on him.
Mm-hmm.
So what the guy did, because he couldn't move his van, he said he walked, got out of his car, walked to the guy behind him who was honking his horn, and then unloaded 7 bullets into the man's body. And then I guess he went back to his car, tried to crank it up, and it crunk up, and he drove down the road. And this guy was in his mid-60s. I mean, so people are pushed to the brink. And if they have that weapon there, hey, they might take it out and use it.
Right.
You know, also another factor, say cultural and social factors. In some communities, carrying a gun is tied to identity. All right. And safety in rural areas, guns were normalized as tools, but they can become deadly when a crisis happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's so true. In some of our cities, guns represent an identity for you. You know, like, man, I got this piece, so I can protect myself. I have this piece, so if somebody rolls up on me, hey, I can unleash it. And then sometimes people have these pieces and they just feel like they can cause drama or damage and they don't have to follow any rules.
Yeah.
They have this big term, and I know I want to do a show on it, called YNs. And I'm not going to tell you what the N mean, but you can, young, N-I, you know, you can put the letters in there. But that's what that stands for. And some of these young guys, they feel like, hey, I can do whatever. This gun is my best friend. If somebody looks at me the wrong way, if someone, you know, says something to me, hey, they're going to get it. So that's a whole different attitude with this culture. And I think social media plays a big piece too.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean? I'm serious about that. I think sometimes people downplay that, but these guys get on social media talking about, look at this AK-47, or look at this, you know, 9mm Uzi with the clip off. I mean, all kind of different things, and it appeals to a lot of people. And these folks act like they're, man, they're big time, they're gangsters, and that's attractive to a lot of the young people. I mean, it's very popular on the internet with social media.
Right. So true.
So let's talk about homicide versus suicide, because we gave two clear, distinct statistics earlier that, you know, that there's a lot of homicides in the black community, but in the white community, suicides, mm-hmm. you know, when it comes to gun violence. It says the majority of gun deaths every year, men are 4 higher risk than women, and white men over 45 make up the bulk. Firearms are uniquely lethal. Suicide attempts with gun are successful about 90% of the time. So as opposed to taking pills, as opposed to saying I'm gonna just jump off a highway or whatever, suicides with a gun, it's a 90% success rate. So when people shoot themselves, hey, that's almost, you know, hey, that's final. This is no end to that game right there. It's final. Mm-hmm. Okay, now
homicide. Uh-huh. You know, black men under 35 at the highest risk of being killed with a gun. Mm-hmm. Many shootings stem from interpersonal disputes.
Right.
Cycles of retaliation, mm-hmm, or domestic violence. Hispanic communities also face a growth sharing of shooting in many cities.
Right. So at this time, I want to play this clip because we're talking about older people. But let's talk about some of the teens, because this is affecting a lot of the adolescents in this country as well.
Okay.
Gun violence is the number one cause of death among kids and teens in the United States. This has doctors and public health experts like me alarmed. We've been tracking what we call the diseases of despair, mental illness, drug overdose, gun violence, for over a decade now. And we're seeing the diseases of despair killing America's kids. Pew Research out earlier this week found a 50% increase in gun-related deaths among kids and teens since 2019. These are preventable deaths. KFF polling also out this week found that 3 in 4 adults who reported there being a gun in the home said at least one gun was stored unlocked, loaded, and/or with ammunition. There's a lot more we could be doing on gun safety. KFF polling also found that only 1 in 4 parents reported that their pediatrician had talked to them about guns, and only 8% about gun safety.
Wow, now those are some hardcore statistics. So they said within the last few years, gun violence has increased by over 35% with teens. That's the number one killer with young adults and teens is gun violence. So over accidents, over overdose is gun violence. I mean, so this is an issue that a lot of us, we realize, have to deal with, that young people are doing this. And I know she talked about a couple stats about how 1 in 3 homes, if they have a gun, they don't have it locked up. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I thought about me. I mean, growing up, my parents had a gun and I knew where the gun was. I mean, I wasn't going to go out in the streets and shoot people with it.
But it wasn't locked up.
It wasn't locked up. They had it in a locked box, but the box wasn't locked. Because right. I remember as I wasn't a kid, I'm probably about 14, 15. I remember going in there and grabbing it and putting it right back in the lock box. And I don't even know if they knew I knew where it was. But I think that is so true. So parents, if you do have firearms, make sure that you lock these firearms up. Lock them up.
I mean, but I even wonder, like, when we purchase them, should they make us purchase a lockbox with them?
I don't.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's got to come with it.
Right.
Like, it's a combo deal. You buy the gun and you get a lockbox. You get a safety box, whatever they want to call it.
But let me tell you this. In Georgia, you don't even have to have a carry permit anymore, so I doubt if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
So that's good theory, though. It seemed like it should be that way.
Yeah.
So let's take a few minutes and talk about the emotional intelligence piece. I think this young lady who I played the audio clip from, she kind of mentioned it, that a lot of kids do not have the emotional intelligence to deal with a lot of conflict these days. So if I'm going through a situation and I don't have good coping skills, or I feel like I'm being bullied and I have access to a firearm, how do I deal with that?
Right.
How do I deal with that? Because I know I worked in several schools over my tenure as an administrator, a teacher, and also, a substitute. I worked in several schools, and I remember I had one incident where we had an active shooter, but thank God no one actually
got hurt. Amen.
And I remember the young man had, when I was at Stone Mountain High School, the young man had brought a gun to school, mm-hmm, with hollow point bullets. And I knew the kid. He was on a wrestling team. Real nice kid. But what happened, people were bullying him, and he felt like he was just I don't know his reason, I'm just speculating, but I know he was telling me, he told me that he was bullied in the past.
Right.
But that particular day, we got a lockdown call throughout the school, and they went through the lockers, and I guess the young man had told someone he had a gun, and you know how kids talk, the word spread, and next thing you know, I saw, you know, they locked us in the classroom for about 3 hours, and come to find out, it was that young man. But I think when he got to court, he said he was being bullied. He didn't know if he was going to use it, but he had a 9mm, I think, with hollow point bullets. So you think about that, and this kid was just 14 or 15 years old. So most shootings aren't pre-planned. They start with conflict, a fight, an argument, or a split-second anger, you know, a decision. And the difference between a shouting match and a shooting often comes down whether someone has the skills to manage that conflict. When people don't know how to handle stress or anger, their brain goes into survival mode. The prefrontal cortex, I know we talk about this, the prefrontal cortex is part that controls judgment, right? Shuts down and decisions are made in the heat of the moment. Now you add a gun to the mix within reach, and the results are often fatal. Because you think about it, in so much of the gun violence that are going on when conflicts happen, just think if that person didn't have access to a gun. I mean, think about that. I think about the times when I was mad and I had a fight with someone. We fought. I mean, it was just like
you
fought with your hands, a fist, and if you got beat up, you got Joan, but you just took the L and you lived another day. But see, today, let's say if someone gets beat up, or let's say if someone is scared, instead of them trying to work it out, even in a physical sense, they want to take a gun out and end someone's life. And again, all of these people aren't bad people who are doing this. They're just caught up in the moment. Just like we said earlier, that pre-cortex, that frontal lobe, that flight or fight, man, I'm angry. Oh man, let me grab this and end this real quick. But you're not really thinking about the consequences later on that you're taking someone's life. And then if you're found guilty, then you're going to be in jail for the rest of your life. And even if you get out of it, that's going to be on your mind for the rest of the life that you took someone's life.
Yeah, it's definitely going to affect you, take someone's life. But let's go back to emotional intelligence and stuff. As adults, a lot of people don't have this.
Right.
So with our kids especially, they don't have it. And so I think what needs to happen is we need to go over things like this. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny how even when someone goes and has an interview for a job, you know, what do we tell them? We ask them different questions. How would you be in this situation? How would you handle this? Mm-hmm. We ask them that at job interviews. And so I think that, you know, even getting our kids prepared for stuff. Mm-hmm. Like if something happens, what do you need to do when you're getting bullied? You know, what's the repercussion? You know, you go and you tell the teacher. After that, the teacher doesn't do anything, then you go to the principal's office and tell the principal. Mm-hmm. But just setting up guidelines for your kids to be able to help them with something. If you're confronted with someone gets in your face and start talking loud, walk away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that you want to be prideful. Like, talk to your kids about pride. Talk to your kids about humility and what all those things mean.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them they're going to feel funny. They're going to feel like everybody looking at them and they want to prove themselves.
Right.
But they have to walk away. The best thing is to walk away, because guess what? You'll live the next day.
That's right.
Like, I think we got to have these real deep conversations with our children about these different things. And I think as adults, we got to help each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? To understand that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because even as adults, sometimes you talk to them and they can't even take constructive criticism.
Yeah.
They get all weird. They get quiet. They get silent. They get distant. Like, what's going on? You act like I hit you in your head or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a lot of this going on and it's not a lot of maturity.
Right. But like you said, I think sometimes the parents don't know how to deal with these things.
Yeah, because the parents, they lack emotionally.
Right. So how can you teach your kids if they're seeing you? And that's one of the characteristics of emotional intelligence when you're trying to teach it is called modeling.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to model that behavior for your kids. So if you're not in that space to model, to be an example, what are your kids seeing?
Mm-hmm.
If they're seeing you always crashing out when something happens, or if they're seeing you get crunk at McDonald's if your order is not, you know, filled or correct, you know, if they see you...
I've been guilty of that before.
You know, if they see you going off on one of your coworkers or your boss, how is that... What I mean, you're setting a bad example for what they're doing.
Right.
You know, so...
And it's so true. Like, like when your kids are with you, you be wanting to pop off. You be like, you just kind of look at them. You be like, okay, I got to act right.
So let's talk about a few of the characteristics. We can talk about self-awareness when it comes to our emotional intelligence. Naming feelings, reducing the intensity. Saying I'm angry or I'm hurt, you know, gives the brain space to cool down. So that way, like, well, let's say if you're in a situation where you have a lot of conflict, just, okay, how am I feeling right now? I'm angry. You know, talking to yourself, because like this says, it gives your brain times to calm down. And also self-regulation techniques, you know, like deep breathing, walking away, grounding exercises, you know, it grounds the nervous system so you won't respond so quickly. And also, just like we talked about earlier, just learning how to deal with conflict, you know, practice conflict resolution. You know, like Feed a Busy Bee said earlier, if this situation happens, how do you deal with it? You know, how do you handle it, you know, and still be positive and productive? You know, and I want to just throw out an interesting fact right here. It says schools that focus and teach social emotional learning see fewer fights and suspensions. Communities with credible messenger programs where former offenders mentor men and see lower shootings. So basically what this is saying,
yeah,
that,
I'm like, what's social emotional learning?
Right, where basically they have classes just like what we talked about. They teach the kids these things.
Okay.
So like they have programs in school, even though they're taking a lot of these programs out, but the schools that implement these types of programs, they have the statistics say that they have fewer violent tendencies,
yeah,
you know, or write-ups for that school system when they really focus on this.
Right.
And I think more schools, I even think jobs should do this. I know they have HR, but I think even teaching people, because you don't know exactly where that person comes from.
And think about lately, it's been a lot of shootings at work.
Oh, yeah. People,
or a lot of people bringing their personal stuff to work.
Right.
Like, you know, just a couple of days ago, the husband goes to the woman's job and kills her on her job. So it's like, it's a lot of stuff. Oh, the guy who flipped out when he's been married to this lady and he had three kids and he found out all three kids were not his and flipped out and went to the job and killed her.
Yeah, killed her.
So it's like, it's so many different things that have happened.
Right.
You know, in these situations.
Right. And I really do believe that there should be more laws when it comes to gun violence or even gun usage.
Well, let's talk back to the schools, though, too.
Because
I know it was even a situation here in Georgia, at Gwinnett, where a guy brought a gun to school, whatever, and they kept it hush-hush and did not tell the parents.
Mm.
And so I think a lot of it, too, is the school has to acknowledge that we have a problem.
Right.
You know, I don't know what you guys thinking and how you guys' school system is and, and what state you guys are in and what you guys are seeing with your school systems. But I know some school systems here in Georgia, they just try to act like nothing's going on.
Right. I remember
you
one.
You know, our school system is good and we don't have games and we don't have this and we don't have that.
That's so true. I remember one lower school system. I remember when I worked there, they kept denying gangs in the school system. All right. So they would say it publicly, we don't have a gang problem. But behind closed doors, they knew they had a gang problem.
Right.
I worked at a school where they would have MS-13 graffiti on the walls. And I would have to walk kids to the bus stop just so they wouldn't get in conflict with a rival gang. So, but they were telling the parents, we don't have a problem in this school district. Or look at our test scores. And the test scores, you know, really good. But they still had issues, but they did not want to deal with the problems that were going on.
Right.
So, on that note, because we talk about what are some of the solutions? What are some of the solutions? Because we can sit here.
This is heavy, though.
Yeah, this is heavy. Like, some of the solutions, teaching kids or teaching adults how to be emotionally intelligent when it comes to conflict.
But
I think that's huge.
Okay, but see, this is my thing.
What's that?
It goes back to the root. Are you teachable? That's one thing I've been seeing. People are not teachable.
Right. Now, you got to be teachable.
You got to be teachable.
But we're just talking about solutions. You know, that's something that's something that, you know, a community can do. I mean, if people aren't teachable, I can't help you with that.
Exactly. Part of the problem.
But what I can do as a community advocate is start teaching emotional intelligence, or schools can implement those programs, or jobs can implement those programs, you know, that hopefully it will reduce those type of violent gun tendencies, you know, when it comes to dealing with people.
Right.
So, you know, I can't control if somebody's not teachable or not, but I can control if I have an organization, let's implement these programs to help people to be more emotionally intelligent, or let's teach programs that help you to deal with conflict, not just on the job, but even when you go home to your spouse or, you know, your significant other, or even if you're walking on the street, how to deal with this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think instilling laws about gun control. But I want to play this audio clip from this. He's a representative up in New York.
Uh-huh.
And he's really voiced his concern how Congress isn't doing anything when it comes to gun control laws.
Nothing. They don't have the courage. They're cowards. Ask them every day, what are they going to do about gun violence?
Tell them.
Don't let them off the hook. Don't let them talk about TikTok. Don't let them talk about nonsense. Talk about the lives of children. American children are being killed in the suburbs, in rural community, in urban communities. Black, white, brown, indigenous, everyone, Asian, everyone. Ask them the question.
I'm talking about gun violence. You know, there's never been
a school shooting
in a school that allows teachers to carry.
Carry guns? More guns leads to more death. Would you listen to what I'm saying?
Calm down, children are dying. I know, I've got
9-year-old children. I worked in the school for 20 years.
You're just screaming.
I was a teacher. I was screaming before you came and interrupted me.
Well, now this John Bowman of New York.
Oh my goodness.
John Bowman of New York is just really just voicing how he felt, and it was a session, and he said, "Look, guys, we're not dealing with gun violence."
You know what I started thinking about when I heard him?
What's that?
I thought about Jonathan Lucas talking about, "You just an angry black.
Angry black man.
You act like an angry black man up there preaching." But man, he was angry.
He was angry because he said Congress is talking about all of these things that do not matter, like TikTok. But he said, but no one's talking about these gun laws where people are getting killed every single day. How anybody can go out and get a gun. Like I said, in Georgia last year, I believe a law was passed that you don't even need a carry permit. Anybody can go get a gun. No matter if they have a background, I can get a gun, but you don't need a permit to carry. Because they still do the background check, but I think that's just a formality now. But anybody can carry, anybody can open carry.
Right.
All
right,
so how does that add up? I was in a neighborhood probably about six months ago, and it was an okay neighborhood, not too bad, not too good, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I was at the stop sign, and I saw a young man. He was probably, I'd say, about 28 years old. He didn't have on a shirt. He was walking across the street carrying an AK-47, literally right in front of the car.
Are you serious?
Yes, right in front of the car. And I just sat there like, what in the world is going on? You know, I had my foot on the brake. I didn't have no gun or nothing, so I would have been messed up. But what I'm saying, this is what I saw. And it wasn't even a bad, bad neighborhood. But this is what's going on. So what kind of laws is Congress, well, I know Congress ain't passing no law now. What kind of laws will be passed to help in this situation? Because I know the NRA, they have a lot of money, you know, and a lot of deaths. It's all about money, but it's sad when no one, our political administration, no one is putting their feet down. And just not this administration. This has been going on for years,
mm-hmm.
You know, and no one's standing up, even to the point of, letting people with mental challenges get guns. I think a couple states passed laws on that, but I think a lot of states they hadn't. And the sad thing about it, I really do believe, and I know I don't have time to play this audio clip, they say some of the red states have the most gun violence throughout the country. But you only see Chicago, the inner cities.
But they say
the red states, like Mississippi, I believe, is one of the highest states with gun violence. I don't have that audio clip, but I know it was several southern states that a lot of people don't talk about. But the narrative is all about, you know, these inner cities where people don't, you know, these blue states.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. But that's the narrative that goes along. But laws need to be passed to protect people. I mean, kids are dying. People are dying. I mean, it's so easy to access a gun. And then in New York, they said most in New York and Chicago, they say 80% of the guns that were found were bought from other states.
Mm-hmm.
So
other countries?
No, states. You know, because certain states have stricter gun laws than some states.
Oh, gotcha.
Right, because New York, their gun law is pretty strict. But they say 80% of those guns were purchased.
Oh, okay, somewhere
you know,
in another state.
You know, illegally
state,
from
yeah.
other states. So that's just something to think about.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's a whole nother thing, too, about these kids killing their parents. That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. Again, access. If they have access to a firearm, their parents get on their nerve, hey, it's easy access. I'm not condoning it. They trust
me. That's so sad.
But they're killing parents. I mean, yeah. I've heard about 4 stories in the last, month of somebody who killed a parent, and one guy killed his grandmother. Yeah. And that's some hardcore stuff. You're shooting your grandmother at 15 years old.
And so that goes back to that mental thing, too.
Right.
Having mental illness, sometimes anger.
Yeah, anger issues.
You know, and we think sometimes our kids, like, oh, they just have anger issues. Like, no, Johnny needs some help.
You're right.
You know, so you got to think about all that stuff. So it's a lot.
It's a lot. So one of the things I do, I want to play this last audio clip, and it's Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. He kind of shows his disappointment about the lack of gun laws in America by breaking down some of the killings that have been going on.
One is too many. One death. By the way, true. It is too many. Violence should never be accepted. It should never be tolerated. But that's for their issue. In the wake of Sandy Hook and Uvalde, and Parkland, and El Paso, and Lewiston, and Aurora, and Buffalo, and Boulder, and Binghamton, and Highland Park, and Monterey Park, and San Bernardino, and San Jose, and San Francisco, and the Pulse Nightclub, and the Colorado Springs Nightclub, and the Little Rock Nightclub, and the Borderline Bar in Thousand Oaks, and the Ned Pepper's Bar in Dayton, and the Waffle House in Nashville, and Virginia Tech, and UVA, and MSU, and UCSB, and FSU, and NIU, and SMC, and the Sutherland Springs Church, and the Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, and the Living Church of God, and the Tree of Life Synagogue, and the Allen Mall, and the Westroads Mall, and Fort Hood, and Lockheed Martin. And what are we f***ing doing? What are we doing? By the way, that is a wildly incomplete list. We kept it to the last 25 years, and it's still not everything.
That's wow. Intense.
That's intense. I mean, at least
20. And I counted off about 20 that he was just
right.
Out.
Mass shootings. And all of these were mass shootings where people were killed. And his question is, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, what are we going to do? So gun violence in America is not one problem. It's many. Suicide in rural towns, homicide in urban centers, children caught in the crossfire, innocent children caught in the crossfire, adults overwhelmed by despair, and kids overwhelmed by despair. But we know what works. Secure storage, community outreach, mental health care, emotional intelligence, conflict skills, smarter policies. If we want to change the numbers, we need to change how we deal with conflict,
yes,
stress, and each other. Because at the heart of the crisis isn't just guns, it's people.
Mm-hmm.
And the choices we make in our hardest moments. And I think that is so true. It's about people. And that's what it goes back to. It's about people. So feed a busy bee. You know what I'm saying? This has been a deep show today. And we come to an end. We come to an end of the show. And my quote of the week is by Coretta Scott King. She says, revenge and retaliation always perpetuate the cycle of anger, fear, and violence. Mm. So that's what we got to remember. You know, we can't be vengeful. We can't be angry. We have to learn how to deal with different things in our life. So on that note, my name is Dr. B. Pope.
And I'm Fee, the Busy Bee.
And we are Busy Out.
Thank you for listening to Real Talk with Dr. B. Pope and Fee, the Busy Bee. Be sure to follow Dr. B. Pope on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And follow Fee, the Busy Bee, on TikTok and Instagram.